Good morning again, Your Honors. Catherine Smith, representing the appellant, Monique Hedrick Riker.
Did you wish to reserve?
I did. Sorry. 4 minutes. 4 minutes. This appeal arises from an improper modification of a parenting plan on 15 days' notice because of the alleged violations of the plan, the non-residential portions of the plan by the mother. I will just briefly remind the court that this is a case in which this case was tried. A parenting plan was entered in August of 2014, leaving the children with the mother who had been their primary parent since birth, and in fact the father conceded that the children should be with the mother. There were 191 restrictions on 191 sub 3 restrictions imposed on the mother based on alleged alienation, and the mother was required to get a psychiatric evaluation, a parenting evaluation, and there were to be no overnights or decision-making with the grandmother, the mother's mother. The parenting plan said that a violation would be a basis for the father to seek primary residential placement. It didn't say primary residential placement would be summarily removed to the father who lives in Connecticut and with whom the children have never lived. And in December of 2014, however, the father brought a motion saying there had been violations, that the mom hadn't signed up for Family Wizard, that he was having difficulty with his Skype visitations, and that he believed derogatory comments were being made, although he didn't identify what they were, why he thought that, or that it was having any effect on the children whatsoever. And the court found the mother in contempt and immediately required the removal of the children to Connecticut to live with their father. The issue here is that was a violation of 260 and 270. 260 requires for a change in custody because of the strong statutory requirement that custody continuity be maintained if at all possible, unless it's necessary to prevent detriment to the child, that you have an adequate cause determination, so you have this preliminary step that needs to be taken, and that there then be an evidentiary hearing. None of those things happened here. Instead, on 15 days' notice with the mom pro se, and based on really minimal allegations of violations of non-residential provisions of this plan, the trial court, based on this supposed retention of jurisdiction, ordered the children to be removed to Connecticut. And that's what happened. And it was improper under 260 and 270, which sets out the hearing provisions for this. Now, the argument has been made, the only justification that's being provided here is that, well, it's okay to do this if you have 191.3 restrictions on the primary residential parent, and then you can just summarily create these sorts of orders and impose and change the primary residential parent just like that. There's absolutely no basis in the statute or in the case law for that argument. And if you think about it, it would be a really bad idea because presumably these 191.3 restrictions are imposed because you think that you need to have some control over the primary residential parent. But that is not a reason to change the primary residential parent without any assessment at all of the new primary residential parent. There literally had not been any dispute about this at trial. So dad becomes primary residential parent without any assessment of the relative qualities of these parties or any assessment of his ability to parent these children who have always been in the primary care of mom.
Well, didn't the trial court make 260 findings?
The trial court made 260 findings, but it was not in a position to do so because it hadn't had a trial. And in fact, if you look at the 260 findings, and we deal with this mostly in our reply brief, those findings don't have anything to do with the detriment to the children. And in fact, there was no evidence of detriment to the children in the mother's household, which is what is required for a modification. I want to deal just briefly with the idea of why this is also a violation of the Relocation Act as well. Of course, 520 sets out factors for when you can require a child to relocate. And the argument that's being made there, and I don't think it necessarily makes any difference because they are exactly the same sort of factors that are required by 260. You need to be able to demonstrate that the parent who has primary care of the children, that there's harm in that household. And that's also true for relocation when you're going to prevent relocation. So the fact that this relocation was required in order to change the primary residential parent without making a determination of whether, in fact, there was going to be harm to the children in the primary resident in the primary residence was improper both under 260 and under 520. But you can go with either of those. The fact is you can't do what was done here as a matter of procedure, and that procedure is not just something that we have to do so we make sure we've checked the boxes. It's to make sure that decisions are being made in the children's best interest and that custodial continuity is not being lost unless it's necessary to prevent the children from coming to harm. Unless the court has any further questions at this point, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Ken Masters for Chandler Riker. The first point is that this was not a modification. Judge North expressly reserved jurisdiction.
Well, he did it in the alternative, so I think we should look at it in the alternative.
Our first point is that it's not a modification.
But he did both. He said, I retain jurisdiction. He made it clear at the time he retained jurisdiction and why. Mm-hmm. I think the parenting plan is clear. I think the record's clear.
Yes.
So then there's an order to show cause as to whether the mother should be held in contempt and a motion for modification.
Correct.
And the parties, Monique was not represented when she filed her response, but she was represented at the show cause hearing.
Correct.
So one issue is whether that show cause hearing was sufficient for purposes of having a 270 threshold adequacy cause hearing and for purposes of 260 and modification. And then there's the argument, well, you deprive me of the right to have an evidentiary hearing or present evidence.
Right, which you never asked for.
And I don't think they raised 270, but they did raise 260.
They did, and the trial court made 260 findings in detail at 176 and at 172 to 173. The trial court found a substantial change in circumstances. The trial court set out the findings, and those findings are amply supported by Mr. Riker's two declarations and the declaration from the private investigator who observed her contumacious contempt in sneaking around so that she could continue to let the children spend the night with the grandmother, who the judge said, on the record, is practically psychotic.
Did the court have conducted some sort of evidentiary hearing, given that some of the facts were contested, even if there wasn't a precise request saying, Judge, I want a trial on this?
Well, there's two reasons why I think not. The first one is that the trial was 4 months prior. The representation from counsel that there was no discussion about the suitability of Mr. Riker's house or the unsuitability is simply false. If Ms. Riker's house was suitable, there would be no 191 restrictions in this case. It's absolutely clear. Now, those are unchallenged. The contempt findings are unchallenged as well. It's unchallenged that she violated the 191s. Why did he put them in place? That is in the record, and he made it very clear. This is your last chance to shape up. If you violate these, I will wind up changing the primary residential placement to the kids. It was very clear to her. That's why it's not a modification, because he retained jurisdiction.
Their argument is it's just like CMF, and you can address why you think it is or isn't like CMF. But in the record, did the court hear evidence about whether Chandler was a suitable parent?
Yes, and he says it in his declaration. He says, I told you at trial about my neighborhood. In his declaration, he says this. But, of course, the trial was only 4 months old. And if you read Judge North's ruling, you can see he remembered this very clearly. He retained jurisdiction because he was very worried.
No, but at the trial, was there evidence about
it? Yes, he says in his, I put on evidence about how suitable my neighborhood, the nice neighborhood I live in, how we've got great educational opportunities, we're close to Yale University, we've got great cultural opportunities for the kids, blah, 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 blah. The only reason you have to ask that question, Your Honor, is because the appellant has failed to bring a record for you adequate to at all address why the 191s were put in place and what Mr. Riker said. Now, that falls on the appellant, not on the respondent. If they failed to bring the record, that's their duty, not ours. So you must accept the assertions that, look, we wouldn't have, remember what 190, the purpose of 191, it says you can put in 191, which these are unchallenged, right? A long-term emotional physical impairment which interferes with the parent's performance of parenting functions. Ms. Riker has mental health issues. That's why he ordered parenting or a psych evaluation and ordered her to follow those things. She has simply refused to do it. Abusive use of conflict by the parent which creates a danger of serious damage to the child's psychological impairment. We have a finding that her abusive use of conflict is serious danger of damage to, and then we, you know, present that. That's what the 191 is a conclusion that there's serious danger, and then there's a finding that her continued abuse of use of conflict is damaging the children under the modifications. There's no question, and these are unchallenged. Now, there's in the reply brief they said, well, we underlined the findings, but in the opening brief there was no argument that these findings are unsupported. So. And we went through them and showed you why they are supported. So there is substantial evidence to support the findings. Then it says, F says, a parent has withheld from another parent access to the child for a protected period. Judge North also discussed that was a serious problem, that she had done all kinds of underhanded, and he uses the word lying, false allegations of abuse, anything she could do. He says, you have manipulated the legal system like a pro.
So back to
and
back.
We are not. I'm not going to tolerate it.
Back to your original argument, which is the court properly retained jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
How do you address CMF, which indicates that there should be some sort of time restriction imposed?
Right. Justice Jim Johnson was focusing on a completely different issue. Of course, first of all, it's factually distinct. He said that a parentage order, you know, the declaration of the father's parentage was a custody decree, right? And that's why we have to say you had to show substantial change. Under that analysis, of course, we did show a substantial change of services. So we meet the CMF. But then he also says, well, what the judge in that case just did was, you know, whenever you want to seek a parenting plan, you guys go ahead. That's totally different than the court saying, I am ordering you to get a psych evaluation, sell the house, do this in a short term, and I'm retaining jurisdiction to monitor your compliance.
He didn't say in a short term. So do we
then? He didn't say in a short term. And we've made that point. And look at his findings and his discussion about the house. You have, if you can do this in 10 days, if you can do this in that, he wants this done now.
But he doesn't say that about the psych eval. So do we then say that there was a reasonable, he wanted it done.
Well, 4 months is not reasonable, and that's a finding. I mean, that's a factual question. Did the judge think it was a reasonable thing that she had not made any efforts to get a psych? You wouldn't second guess that, Your Honor. You'd say, well, the trial judge looked at that.
No,
and said,
but I'm looking at CMF, and so there is no time limit on the psych evaluation.
I don't agree with it, Your Honor. He has found in a 191 restriction that this is causing damage to the children.
So
there's no way you could infer he thought, oh, whenever you get
then
around.
Then it's an inference. And so all I'm asking is whether it's an inference that he's imposing a reasonable time.
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah. And more importantly, look at even in CMF, it's 18 months. In Posseguir, it's like 17 months. In True, it's a year. Okay, we're at 4 months here. There's no question we're inside what the CMF says. Look, Posseguir's fine. True is fine. The court directly addresses them and says, I'm affirming, you know, we're reaffirming those cases. In this case, there was no limit, and it took 18 months for them to ever get around to doing anything, and that's too long. I don't think.
Could Judge North have done the same thing 5 years down the road as opposed
to? I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Even as to a stayover with the grandmother.
he could have found contempt, but I think. I have to reiterate, of course, could he have done it? I guess I should answer your question more carefully. The correct thing to do would be a modification. Under my theory that it wasn't a modification, that would be too long. But he did do a modification, right? A motion was brought for modification, and he did make the substantial change. And of course, there were two findings.
Well, then back to
there were two findings.
What about but what about adequate cause? I mean, he
had adequate cause, but he didn't need it. Under the modification statute, there were two findings of contempt and as to the residential provision. So he didn't need adequate cause, but he did make a finding of adequate cause. And it's express finding in the order, and it's supported by findings that have not been challenged here and which are amply supported by the evidence in the record. I mean, this is a very straightforward abuse of discretion analysis, and that's the way that you should approach it. This case is very close to the true situation at Posner is also, and it's nothing like CMF. Remember that in CMF they're talking about the big societal question. So many people use a parentage determination as a custody order. If we were to say it's not, we're going to overturn, we're going to throw everybody into turmoil. So Justice Jim Johnson's reasoning was completely inapposite to a situation like this, where the judge expressly retains jurisdiction because he's very scared and worried about the psychological health of these children.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I want to correct a couple of factual statements. Yes, thank you. The mother didn't refuse the evaluation. She was in the process of getting an evaluation. This is 4 months after trial. The process of getting an evaluation, she explained to the court that she'd had difficulty paying the retainer because, in part, the father had delayed getting 401k funds to her. I mean, she was out of money at this point. So what you're hearing here as the argument for this is that if 191.3 restrictions are imposed on a parent, then, and the trial court retains jurisdiction, then on 2 weeks' notice, without any analysis of the party's current conditions or what the consequences of this is going to be for the court, for the children, they can immediately order a removal of the children from their primary residential care. Now,
what about respondents' argument that a lot of the factual bases for the decision, there's not been assignment of error on appeal?
The factual basis for the initial decision? Or the
191 restrictions.
The 191 restrictions. Well, of course, we couldn't appeal from those. We could only appeal from this determination that was made in an improper manner as a modification. And you cannot have an open-ended reservation so you can change custody without meeting the standards of 260. And it is not true that there was no request for a hearing. The mom, when she was pro se, said, you can't do this pursuant to this. She didn't say, I need a trial, you need to have adequate cause. But she said, I don't think that you can do this on this type of motion. And she was right. The statute is very clear that you have to have an adequate cause determination, and then you have to have trial. And that is true under CMF. It's also this idea that judges can sort of keep a parent that they're not quite happy with on a short leash for some unlimited amount of time is just not true. You see this, for instance, in Hall v. Brulé, which is the most recent Division III case that said, essentially under these circumstances, this is a modification. You have to meet the modification standard, and if there's a new judge request, you get a new judge. Now, that is not what happened here, and it was not proper, and it's not just a matter of, well, now Judge North is deciding that he's going to give custody to Dad, because that was never an issue at the trial court. He said, and in fact, the mom wasn't put on notice that if she violated these non-residential 191.3 restrictions, that somehow the children were immediately going to be taken away.
Well, that's what he said in the order.
Well, no, what he says is that a violation would be a basis for the father to seek primary residential placement. How do you get primary residential placement once a permanent parenting plan is entered? You have to meet the modification standards. So, yes, it's true there were 191.3 restrictions imposed. I wish I could have challenged those. But, of course, what we were challenging was this two-week send the kids to Connecticut instead. And if I was up here arguing about those, I'd be told it was too late. And you'd be right.
Her counsel didn't request an evidentiary hearing, though. What's the significance of that?
He did say that there needed to be a modification action, and a modification action would rather than a motion, and a modification action requires an adequate cause determination and requires an evidentiary hearing, and that was not provided here. So I don't know why we would be imposing a common law, case law, new rule for 190 for parents who have 191(3) restrictions imposed against them. And if you did, it would be a violation of COI, and it would be a violation of Kinnon, which also says that you need Kinnon. In Kinnon, the question was whether you could remove restrictions without an evidentiary hearing. It was a modification action, and you couldn't. And that's also true here. It should certainly be true here when the consequence of this was to have these children move from the only caregiver they had ever had, literally with regard to the twins, they had never lived with their father, and move them across the country without any assessment, without any factual findings in the original thing that the father's home was suitable for them and that it was necessary to prevent harm to the children. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our calendar this morning.